let's get started.
Wait, just a minute, partner.
No.
Guess again, freak boy.
To the Batmobile. Let's go.
AudioTU.com. Another fresh picked pod from AudioTU.com. Shutters Inc. with Shelton Muller.
Hi, and welcome to episode 18 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from AudioTU.com, and with me on the line via Skype from Melbourne for the last time in 2005, the king of the camera, Shelton Muller. How are you?
I'm really well, Bruce. Really well. Yourself?
Excellent.
Good to hear. You preparing yourself for some holidays?
Absolutely. I fly out to Western Australia in a few days' time, and I'll be there for 8 or 9 days. And
very nice.
Yeah, I can't wait. I haven't spent Christmas with my dad and his family for 10 years. So.
Yeah. Oh, well, I hope you have a great time, mate. So nice part of the world you're heading to.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you're listening to us from somewhere else on the globe, and you want a great place to visit, Western Australia is gorgeous.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. If you are coming to Australia, you know, so many people only do the East Coast, but the West Coast is something else again.
Yes, absolutely beautiful.
Definitely worth some time and money to go and see it.
It's a hell of a flight, though, I tell you. We're a big country.
It is. Mm. And I think that's one thing that a lot of people overlook. They don't realize just how big Australia is.
Yeah. Huge place.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you have a great time.
I'm sure I will. And what about you? What are you doing?
Well, I've been away, as you know, and I've been away enough, so I'm not going anywhere, really. I actually have a lot of work to do, but I'll take a few days off over, you know, from the 25th on into the new year. But no, not going anywhere, not yet. I'm off to New Zealand in March, but until then, I'm staying right at home, and I don't mind that at all.
Fantastic. Okay, so for the final Shutters Inc. for the year, what are we going to cover?
Well, we're going to talk, we're going to answer a couple of David's questions.
Yeah.
He emailed us, thank you very much for that. Tells us that he likes to listen to us on his PDA while he's working out, which causes him a little bit of difficulty because he can't wait to finish and get his camera out, which is nice to know. But good on you, mate, for listening to us while you're working out. Most people listen to music to get the rhythm up, but we'll try and make this as rhythmic as possible for you. Now, you asked some interesting questions, and I won't answer all of them in this podcast, but let's talk about the first one just very quickly. And you ask about buying used lenses, and I'll talk about this, and then we'll move on to the main thing we're going to talk about in a minute, which is your question about setting up a studio at home. Buying used lenses is a good idea. I have a lot of secondhand lenses and have owned a lot of secondhand lenses in my time. But of course, because they are probably the most important part of the camera, it's the part that light comes through, it's the part that makes your picture work or not, you do have to be very careful with what you look for in a lens. The first thing, of course, make sure that it's compatible with your camera's lens mount, because some cameras have actually changed their lens mount completely over the years. Canon and Minolta come to mind. And even now, Canon have two different connections for their own cameras, depending on which camera you buy, Pro or perhaps just their straightforward SLRs. But you can have a bit of a problem there, so make sure it's compatible. In the case of a camera system that hasn't changed its lens mount, say like Nikon, for instance, there are still compatibility issues. The lens might fit, but it might not meter, and the camera may not recognize that it's even on there. You can still take pictures with it, but you'll have to be a little bit clever about how you do that. The lens itself has to be in good condition. The outer body of the lens, well, you should try and have a look naturally for scratches and marks to make sure that it hasn't been thrown around. A lot of photojournalists will throw their lenses literally into their gadget bags because they don't have time to be neat and tidy when they're on a shoot. They throw it literally and bang, crash, whatever, and they don't really care. You have to be very careful about stuff like that. Check the focusing ring. Make sure that it's not too loose. Make sure it's not too tight either, because, of course, that can also be a problem. And make sure that, you know, it doesn't rattle. Perhaps the most important thing to check when you're looking at lenses is the rear element. The front element has a couple of marks. It's usually not a problem. But if the rear element has a mark or a scratch, don't buy it, or at least get the lens at such a good price that you can get the lens professionally polished and get that rear element scratch removed.
Now, by the rear element, you mean the element closest to the film plane, correct?
Yes, that's right. That is where any mark will show up in an image. I had a 24mm lens that I bought secondhand, and it had just the tiniest nick on the rear element. and every image in the same place was a glitch right there. Wow. So it was the smallest nick. I didn't think it would matter. This is years ago, and I eventually just got rid of the lens because no matter what picture I took, it was always soft. It was blotchy right in that section there in the same place in every image. So be careful of the rear element. If it's a zoom lens, make sure that it fits a one-touch zoom. I would suggest that you hold it up and hold it upside down or hold it vertically and both ways. And if the zoom ring actually falls too quickly, then it's a bit loose and might have been overused, might need a little bit of adjustment, those kinds of things. Also, look through the lens. Hold the lens up towards the light and make sure that there's no fungus on the inside. If people live in tropical areas or they've been through tropical areas, you can get a fungus growing inside your lens, which you can see quite evidently if you have a look through it. Open the aperture right up and have a look through it, and you'll see that. If it does have fungus, of course, you're going to have to get the lens completely dismantled and cleaned, put back together again. It's an expensive process, and it doesn't ensure that your lens will never, ever have a recurring fungus problem. Sometimes they can't get the most minute trace of fungus out, or they miss a little bit, and it just grows right back. So you do have a little bit of a problem there. So I hope that just gives you an idea. But some of the best lenses ever made, David, were made in years gone by. The glass was fabulous. The construction, just fabulous. A lot better than some of the newer lenses, which have plastic barrels and plastic rings, etc., plastic mounts now sometimes. So if you find a good lens, doesn't matter if it's a few years old, they had excellent optics. Just make sure it's a good lens and it works on your camera. But you also asked about setting up a home studio, and I think it's an excellent question because it's such a great arena of photography into which you can put some time and interest. It can be an expensive process, but you've asked me to try and give you some ideas to put something together that won't break the bank. You can buy studio kits, I know in Australia, for around $1,000 they start at, which would have a couple of flash heads and stands and brollies and things like that, and all goes into a little kit and you can carry it around. And that's not a bad idea, and if you're not a professional, there are perfectly good working kits. You can try a company called Dragon Image. They have a shop in Melbourne, Sydney, and Brisbane, and they do a lot of Chinese imports, and the Chinese gear isn't that bad, really. So you can give that a try. But let's just talk about a makeshift studio for now. First of all, you need a room, and I would suggest that the room have a fair bit of width and a fair bit of height. Width is good because you want to be able to move your lights right around to the side of your subject, especially if you're doing portraits. And height is good because there are some lighting techniques that require the light to be over and above the subject, especially hair lighting. And if you're doing Hollywood lighting or glamour lighting on your subject, that needs to be fairly high. I'll talk about that in a minute. You don't really need a full lighting kit. A lot of photographers think you need 3-4 lights and, all sorts of attachments. To be honest with you, if you look at the work of the great master painters such as Rembrandt, he used one light source. It was a window, usually. And if you look at the classic portraits of the 19th century and the early 20th century, they were all made in window-lit studios that were designed or, built specifically for photography, where they used curtains and they used to just open windows and allow the light to pour in. Now, this is really essentially one light source. And if you've got one reflector, and the reflector can be anything from a white bit of cardboard to something you buy commercially, or a white sheet even, then you've got a fairly good working portrait lighting setup that would cover you for most portraits that you'd want to do. Now, what that light can be, a professional flash head. It could be something you design yourself that's a tungsten light source, or even halogen. You can go down to Bunnings and buy halogen lights on stands for $20. And if you're shooting digitally, you just set your white balance to halogen and away you go. You can reflect that through all sorts of cloth diffusing materials. You can reflect that off white walls, white roofs, and you can have a very good working studio with all sorts of makeshift lighting equipment that you can buy at your local hardware store or your local lighting store. Really, essentially, you don't need professional equipment to set up a studio, it's good if you're going to be doing a lot of work because they're designed for the job, and we've talked about that before. But really, you can set up a studio using any kind of light. As I've said, you can use, you know, tungsten, a tungsten lighting system that you can buy at the hardware store, or halogen lights. Anything will work. If you're creative enough in your thinking and you understand light, you can use any light source, and especially if you're shooting digitally, set your white balance accordingly. If you want two lights, then I would suggest that you use one as a hair light to separate the subject from the background, and a key light to light the face, and a reflector, of course, just to throw a little bit of light back on the shadow side. You can move the reflector back and forth so that you can vary your contrast levels between the fill and the key. You can use lights, of course, as fill, but a reflector will do just fine. I've very rarely actually used a second light as a fill. I've usually just used reflectors. Now, as for your backdrop, well, you can buy commercially made backdrops, but really what you want is something that is not distracting, which is what commercially made backdrops are designed to be, just a mottled color behind the subject. I would suggest a warm color, but really that's a matter of personal taste. But sometimes the most flattering portraits are created where the backdrop is a sort of a warmer brown, or perhaps even a colder, darker blue, but that really is a matter for personal taste. You can make them yourselves by getting large sheets of cloth and tie-dyeing. You're doing a bit of tie-dyeing so it creates a mottled effect. You can buy backdrop paper. You can paint the wall using a mottled brush effect. There's all sorts of things you can do for your backdrop. Stands to put your lights on. Again, you can be creative by buying stands that are used for multi-purpose. Make your own or buy lighting stands. Lighting stands aren't that expensive, and especially if you're going to be using flash heads or some form of artificial lighting, you want to be able to elevate them and you want to be able to move them around quite freely. So I'd suggest you buy some proper stands. So really, essentially, you can, even for a few hundred dollars or less, set up a fairly good working portrait studio that doesn't require a lot of technology. It certainly doesn't require a lot of space, and you can pick some fabulous head and shoulder portraits with one light and a reflector. But you know, you've just got to be very creative in how you think. Understand light and you'll be able to put together a studio, a working home studio, with anything. Now, just as a suggestion, David, learn four different kinds of studio lighting, and they can be really achieved with any kind of lighting equipment that you buy, and they are Rembrandt lighting, broad lighting, narrow lighting, or otherwise known as short lighting, and butterfly lighting, which is also known as Hollywood or glamour lighting. Now, those are four portrait lighting techniques that you should learn. And if this wasn't audio and it was visual, I could tell you a little bit more about them. But you can find those techniques written in most manuals about portrait lighting, and they're not hard. If you learn those four and try out some portraits, you'll do very well. The one thing that I've omitted to mention is materials to change how your light affects the subject. You can use brolies to shoot through or reflect out of. You can also just build scrims out of some plastic piping and some diffused material through which you can diffuse your light from the other side. You can, of course, paint the wall white and reflect the light off of that. Be creative, as I said, and you can create a home studio that doesn't cost you much but will produce some absolutely beautiful portraits. You don't need thousands of dollars worth of lighting gear if you're just a little bit smart.
Sensational.
Well, I hope that helps, David. Let us know. I've got some more questions that I'll probably talk about in the new year, but no doubt we'll be getting a lot more questions from our listeners over the next few weeks and into the new year, so we'll see what we can answer as we go. But again, thank you all for your interaction. If you've got nothing to read over the next few weeks while you await our return, head down to your local camera store in Australia and get a copy of Total Image, or if you're in a camera house store, ask for Better Pictures. And may I also suggest that we have an internet magazine for digital life style users. It's www.digitalmagazine.com.au, and you can download a PDF magazine that talks about all sorts of digital equipment and digital techniques. So there's things that you can occupy yourself with until we return.
Excellent. And the great thing about the online magazine is that any of our listeners can get hold of it.
Yes, that's right. No matter where they are.
Unlike the hard copy.
Yes, that's true. Unless they're lucky enough to live in this fabulous country of
ours. That's it. All right, well, I'd just like to take this opportunity to thank all of our listeners for all of the feedback and the emails and the interaction that they've given us over the last 6 months or so.
Hear, hear, absolutely.
And wish all of you a very Merry Christmas and a safe and happy New Year. And we'll talk with you January the 8th. We'll be back.
Looking forward to that.
Absolutely. And you have a good one too, Shelton.
Thanks, Bruce. You take care of yourself. You have a great time with your family, mate. We'll talk to you next year.
Absolutely. See you then.
See you soon. Bye.
You've been listening to another Fresh Picked Pod from audiotoyou.com. Audio to You delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable.
You be the boss.
Hear what you want to hear.
When you want to hear it.
Hey, now that's a good idea.
Audiotoyou.com. Hit us today.
And remember,
Control V to bookmark.
Audiotoyou.com.